and that Milarepa has to build these towers to purify his karma from having acted as a black magician, having caused the death of all of these people. But I think we can take it rather further than that, because I have big questions about can one purify one's karma by doing useless things? Well, I'll tell you what I think. So there's a famous, it's appropriate that the Buddha gets at least a guest spot in the course of this talk. There's a very famous story, the simile of the snake that the Buddha gives. Yeah? What he says is that, shall I read it to you? No. I'll summarize it, actually. What he says is that there are Dharma practitioners who don't fully take on board. They misunderstand the nature of the Dharma teachings. They don't reflect fully enough on them. They don't take them into themselves enough. They learn the Dharma only for the sake of criticizing others and for winning in debates. So they do not experience the good for the sake of which they learn the Dharma. So the teachings cause them harm. They get unhelpful consequences. They're painful consequences from that. And that's in the same way that if you needed to catch a snake and you went out and you see a snake. Actually, I will read this because it's a bit strange. It's a bit strange. Culturally, it's just a bit weird. Because it's because suppose a man needing a snake, seeking a snake, wandering in search of a snake. It's this whole idea of, oh, I really need a snake today. You know, I better wander in search of a snake because I really need one. Just really like that idea. So suppose a man needing a snake, seeking a snake, wandering in search of a snake, saw a large snake and coiled in its and grasped its coils or its tail. So if you grab a snake by its tail or in the middle, it'll swing round and it'll bite you. Yeah, you have to grasp a snake by the head or near the head. So if you do that, it'll turn around, it'll bite you, and you will come to suffering or death. Yeah, because you grasp it. So the Dharma is the same thing. If you grasp the Dharma in the wrong way, if you don't apprehend the Dharma in the right way, if you don't use the Dharma in the right way, it'll turn around and bite you. Now, I don't think we've got any choice, actually, other than to grasp the Dharma in the wrong way. When I was first thinking about going along to a Buddhist center, I talked to my friend Maitri Devi, who, as she is now, it was Tanya then, saying I didn't want to go for the wrong reasons. And she just sort of smiled and said, well, you can't go for the right reasons. You'd have to be enlightened to go for the right reasons. Yeah? And we're not enlightened, yeah? We don't see things as they are. We're confused, deluded, ignorant, however you want to sum it up. So what we do is we come along to the center, don't we? Yeah? And we learn to meditate. We're introduced to the Dharma. We begin to practice. Yeah? We learn about the precepts. We learn about the Noble Eightfold Path. We learn about, say, perhaps the five spiritual faculties, the six perfections. Don't worry if you haven't come across these lists, you will in time. And, well, as we learn more, we practice more. Practice rounds out, doesn't it? We become more experienced. We learn more about it. We're able to put it more in. Yeah. So we build a practice as we go along. Yeah. We do what we're taught at classes, what we learn in study groups, what we learn through reading in books, what we discover on retreats. Yeah? So I think that what's going on here, I think that the towers, I'm not sure that maybe Milarepa did bring the towers, but in terms of what's significant to us, what this is about the edifice of Dharma practice. Yeah? Let's not worry about too much about the historical accuracy. This is a symbolic story, like all Buddhist stories. It's about Dharma practice. What can we learn about it? And I think we can learn a lot more from this story than just that, you know, if you do what your teacher tells you, you'll purify your karma. I think it's more subtle than that, and I think it's more directly applicable to us than that. Because we kind of create these towers, we build these towers of our practice. So what happens? We established a basis. We built our round tower, as it were, to emulate Milarepa. Well, it works, doesn't it? It works. You wouldn't be here if it didn't. We grow. We become a bit more aware. We become perhaps a little bit more proficient at meditation. Perhaps we become a little calmer. We're able to concentrate a little better. Our friends start to notice we've become a little friendlier, perhaps a little more generous, perhaps a little more kind. And that's great, isn't it? You know, we enjoy that. We appreciate the fruits of our practice. It's rewarding. It's enjoyable. But what happens to most of us? Sorry, cases really aren't that well designed for these, are they? They sort of.
I'll just look it on my shirt.
What happens is that if we're sincere about our practice, if we're diligent about it, what often happens is that we reach these points. My friend Achal Avadra used to talk about it. At times we all have to go through the desert, as it were. There are times when we can sit down and we feel like we haven't got the faintest idea how to meditate. Or we sit down and we try meditating. We remember all of the instructions, but somehow we seem to be stuck. Doesn't seem to be working. Or perhaps we have a little insight, a little understanding that comes to us, perhaps on retreat, perhaps in the course of a class, perhaps something we're taught. It shocks us, or sometimes even frightens us. I certainly know one of my friends, had a meditation experience that frightened him off meditation for several years. It took him quite a long time to get on, which wasn't an experience of fear, it was an actual experience of the love of Tara, which was so overwhelming to him that he was very wary of even meditating for quite a long time afterwards. So we perhaps get a deeper understanding, or perhaps we just hit a wall with something. Something happens and we feel somehow stuck. Somehow the Dharma's lost its charm. It doesn't seem to work for us in quite the same way that it did. It doesn't seem to be quite as shiny as it used to be. And what usually happens when this happens, what usually goes on, our usual response to this, or a very common response to this, is we think perhaps there's something wrong with us. Oh, well, I've got psychological issues which I need to sort out, or I can't do Dharma practice. Everybody else can. As another one of my friends was sort of said when he was sort of going on about how he couldn't practice the Dharma, somebody said, "And what makes you so special? Yeah, everybody else can get enlightened but you." Or we think there's something wrong with the practices. Oh, well, actually, I need this. I need to do the Chumbawamba visualization or something. You know, it's kind of something else. I need a new practice because these ones have stopped working. Or we think there's something wrong with the conditions we're in. Yeah, or we need to change our life around. Or there's something wrong with our teachers. So maybe we need to go and find another Buddhist teacher somewhere. Maybe we need to become Sufis instead, or whatever. You know. And I think that one of the reasons for this is a misapprehension of a metaphor that's used in Buddhism. Because we often talk about Buddhism as a path, don't we? Yeah? We even go to the extent that we translate the three trainings of Buddhism, the three shiksha, the sila, samadhi, prajna, ethics, meditation, wisdom. We often translate that as the threefold path, which is actually a complete mistranslation. It's much better as three trainings. Or, as a number of you will have heard me quote Robert Thurman, who translated this as the three educations. Buddhism consists of an education in ethics, an education in meditation, and an education in wisdom. And the point he makes is, you don't need churches or temples for that, do you? You need schools. You need to learn. Put what you learn into practice. But we translate that as a path. And paths go from A to B, don't they? They're linear. You know, we're here and we go to enlightenment. You know, I'm unenlightened now, I do this, I get to enlightenment. I think this is a consequence of our whole model of evolution, actually. I think it's the consequence of the whole kind of enlightenment model of continual development, the sort of the Western enlightenment, I mean here. You know, this sort of Victorian sense that things were always going to get better and better.